Democrats on Capitol Hill are increasingly calling for impeachment inquiries to begin against President Trump. Congressman Connor Lamb, who represents suburban Allegheny County and Beaver County, has been more cautious. 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins sat down with Lamb. She started by asking him about President Trump's decision to give Attorney General William Barr sweeping power to declassify documents related to the investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election.
I usually try hard to listen to both sides of these debates. So if there is a legitimate reason for this, I have not heard it yet, and I'm very concerned. This has no precedent. It seems to be rooted in this idea that the president's spokeswoman keeps talking about, that there's some kind of conspiracy afoot. And I can just say personally, I've worked with the FBI very closely in my old job as a prosecutor. They're some of the finest people I've ever known. And we have members of Congress on both sides, including one Republican who used to serve in the CIA, who doesn't support this idea that they would lose control over declassifying their own information.
I was going to bring that up. You were an assistant U.S. attorney for the Department of Justice. Do you ever hear from your former colleagues about morale at the DOJ? And do you have concerns about the overall direction that the attorney general is taking the department?
The time when I heard from folks at DOJ the most was during the government shutdown, because FBI agents and prosecutors were not being paid. And it was bad. I mean, at the end of the shutdown, the FBI here locally was actually running their own food bank for agents and employees, which, you know, many of these people are veterans. They work late at night. You know, one of my best friends in the whole world is an FBI agent in New Jersey, and he was doing a wiretap investigation and staying out in his car in the middle of the night during the shutdown. So we need to treat these people better because of how important their job is.
How do you read the special counsel's report as someone who did work in the Department of Justice? What should Congress do next? Do you think that we should move on and talk about any other issue besides this, that we've read the report and that there is no evidence of obstruction or collusion, as many Pennsylvania Republicans seem to think?
Well, I think the report is one step in a much longer journey. Look, what we're trying to do is get to the truth, and the American people deserve to know what went into this investigation and everything that was behind it. So we're continuing to work on getting the evidence that's behind the report. I've read the report very carefully. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. And so Congress is continuing to chase down those leads and try to get access to more information and witnesses. And I support their efforts to do that.
There are other Pennsylvania Democrats, Congresswoman Madeline Dean, Mary Gay Scanlon, and Congressman Dwight Evans, who have said that it's time to begin an impeachment inquiry against President Trump because Congress just isn't getting any of the requests fulfilled by the White House. The White House isn't complying with various subpoenas and requests for witnesses to testify before Congress. You've said that you believe no one is above the law, but that this issue will be resolved by the courts. Why?
Well, so far it is being resolved by the courts. And so where Democrats in Congress and the administration have disagreed about getting certain information, we've gone to court, and just last week, two courts ruled in our favor with respect to subpoenas. And, you know, as far as I can tell, that's how our system was designed to work. Sometimes the legislative branch and the executive branch disagree, so they go to the judicial branch for resolution. You mentioned some other congressmen. Two of those that you mentioned serve on the Judiciary Committee. So I know they've been frustrated by the lack of information. But the views of our leadership are very clear, and the people who are actually running these investigations, and they're confident that we're going to get resolution in the courts.
You know, a criticism of finding resolution by way of the courts is that it might take a really long time to get answers. Is that a timeline that you're comfortable with?
We shouldn't be doing this for any political purpose. So I'm not sure why the timeline is so important if we're not taking into account the 2020 elections. And I think some people are trying to rush this through before then. But my point is, let's get to the right answer no matter how long it takes. And that involves following the system that our founders laid out for us, which is that you go to court in these situations when you can. And that's what we're trying to do.
I want to talk about some of the legislation that you've introduced this term, specifically the Whole Veteran Act, which just passed the House. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you first just give our listeners a brief overview of this legislation and talk about what happens next with this bill, its prospects in the Senate?
Sure. There's a great program within the VA medical system right now called Whole Health. And basically what it's designed to do is something pretty radical. They're trying to give veterans access to a whole lot of alternative treatments for pain, especially, so that they won't have to be prescribed some of these addictive and dangerous painkillers. And so some of the options that are out there are anything from acupuncture to massage to yoga to meditation to nutritional counseling. The idea is these are low-cost and relatively non-dangerous ways to get people some treatment that can help them a lot in the long term. So what my bill does is say, let's collect an exhaustive amount of data on this program now, see how it's working, see who has access to it, and see how we can expand it to get more veterans access. It'll help the people that need these treatments. But one of the other things we're struggling with is not enough veterans actually come to the VA right now for treatment. So we have this suicide epidemic where 20 veterans a day are committing suicide. Only 7 of those are getting treatment in the VA system. So we're hoping that something like the Whole Health Program actually will attract new veterans and especially younger veterans back into the system.
Something that I've heard from a lot of veterans here is their frustration and just lack of trust with the VA health system in general. And, you know, you're on the Veterans Committee, you're a veteran yourself. What do you see as the biggest problem or holdup in that agency? It's not a new idea that veterans are frustrated with this healthcare system. And what do you think Congress can do to kind of wrap its arms around this mess of an agency?
Well, it's not a mess of an agency. And I think that it has gotten a bad rap due to a pretty intentional marketing campaign by those who would like to privatize these essential services. So I'm very proud of the work that the VA does. And the dynamic that I see, at least among younger veterans, is that once people actually get enrolled in the VA system and go to our VA hospitals for care, they're almost always very happy with that care and they like their doctor and they feel like they're well taken care of. We're lucky here in Pittsburgh to have that because not everybody does. But there's clearly holdups when it comes to enrolling people for care and getting them into the system, and that's where people get the most frustrated. So we're working, for example, on this medical records project where our vision is that you would leave active duty service and your medical record would be entirely digital and it would just switch over automatically into the VA system, which would allow you to be enrolled automatically and allow the VA hospital to know everything they need to know about your medical history. Right now, you still carry around this enormous paper record throughout your service and when you want to go to the VA for the first time, and that makes it too slow and burdensome for people.
What was your experience with the VA?
I did enroll in the VA, and it was cumbersome. It took a really long time. Actually, the first time I went to a VA hospital to be enrolled, they couldn't access my records in the system, and the clerk was convinced that I was some kind of a spy because he thought
really?
My records were classified. But it was a typical technical glitch, and we just really haven't invested in the right IT at the VA. We also have 50,000 job vacancies in the VA because the administration's been a little slow to hire folks. And so part of it is we just need to staff up, and we need to take care of the working people that we have there so that they'll stay and then be able to take care of the veterans in turn.
I mentioned your work on the Veterans Affairs Committee. You also are on the Science Committee in the House. So I wanted to ask you about the idea that some Democrats have proposed of this sweeping Green New Deal to address climate change. You've said voters in your district are pragmatic and are really focused on job growth. So what does a policy look like that you could support that doesn't alienate your constituents but goes far enough to mitigate the effects of climate change in the future?
There are several, but I'll give you one that I've worked a lot on, which is nuclear energy. So we have a power plant in my district out in Beaver Valley that employs 1,000 people full-time. Thousands more union tradesmen and women come in twice a year to do maintenance and operational upgrades. Nuclear power is carbon-free. It powers 40% of our grid here in Pennsylvania, and it's what they call baseload power, meaning it works all the time. In horrible storms, when other sources of power are wiped out, it's still there running reliably. We don't have to worry about whether the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. So that's an example of something that I think serves a lot of important purposes. And it looks at the fact that we already have people working great union jobs. They're Navy veterans, many of them. And I want those jobs to survive. And I want them to be able to continue to contribute the clean power that they're already giving us.
Another issue that's made a lot of headlines both nationally and statewide across the country is the issue of abortion and abortion laws. You're Catholic. You have said that you're personally opposed to abortion, but I wanted to ask you what you make of Alabama's law that bans nearly all abortions, including in cases of rape or incest.
I think it's unconstitutional and it's going to be overturned in the courts.
Where do you stand on the idea of states proposing restrictions on abortion? Do you think that this should be up to states? Where do you think this issue should go?
Well, a woman's right to choose is a federal constitutional right, and it has been for 45 years. There's nothing new about that. And so states have taken some of their own measures over time, which inevitably get challenged in courts, and then we leave it up to judges to decide whether there's been what we call an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. And, you know, I think for the most part, courts have judged that one pretty fairly. And you're going to see a lot of these new laws subjected to that very stringent test. And I think most, if not all, of these new laws are going to fail. And what that tells you is that the people pushing them seem to be playing politics more than they are actually trying to take care of their citizens. And, you know, look, these are women that need health care and they need these services. And they're going to get these services, whether we like it or not, at least wealthy ones will. And I personally don't believe that there's one constitution for wealthy people and one for everybody else. So if it's a right, it's a right, and everybody should have access to it.
I want to move on to 2020. Joe Biden kicked off his campaign here and got the endorsement of Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey. And Biden actually canvassed for you during your special election here last year. Were you tempted to endorse him as a presidential candidate right away? And why didn't you?
I think, like a lot of people, I'd like to hear more about what all the candidates have to say and see where this thing goes. It's very early. You know, I mean, this is May of 2019, and, you know, we won't be voting in our primary until almost a year from now. That being said, I did get to spend a fair amount of time with the vice president, and I know that he understands the issues Western Pennsylvania faces and that he feels very deeply about them. And so that makes me very confident in his leadership. And, you know, I'll be watching just like everybody else does.
He's seen as one of the more moderate Democrats in the field of candidates. Do you think that a moderate candidate is what the party needs to win an election in 2020?
I'm not as concerned about the label that you stick on it as I am about, you know, how much they understand the economic issues we face and the need to get things done in Washington, not just take a position. But I think that, you know, someone like Vice President Biden, for example, has 30 or 40 years worth of experience in Washington, D.C., including a relationship with Senator McConnell, who, you know, at least for now, runs the majority in the Senate. And if we actually want to get things done for the American people, meaning finish laws, we got to get people working together again. And so that's the main thing I'm looking for.
Congressman Lamb, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.